Hello, I'm Elizabeth, an obsessive backyard gardener who might be able to offer you a couple of tips.
And I'm Keith, a landscape consultant, and I'm also passionate about gardening.
The one thing we both have in common is
muddy boots.
Owning a worm farm is something I've often considered, as there are numerous benefits to having one in the garden. However, I still don't have one because I'm concerned that it'll take some effort to look after and I won't have time to do so. But I'm hoping that our guest today is going to allay all of those fears and have me set up and ready to go by the end of this podcast. Welcome, Richard Thomas from Worm Lovers. Thank you, Richard, for joining us.
Good to see you, mate.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth. Yeah, good to see you. Yeah, great.
So, Richard, before we ply into, ply you with questions about the responsibilities of owning a worm farm, we would love to hear about Worm Lovers. The name obviously gives us a fairly good idea, but can you tell us what the business is all about?
Sure. So what we're all about, we've just reached our 10th year, actually, of Worm Lovers, which is great. But I've been involved with worms for probably over 20 years. So I started a long time ago when I was lived with my uncle in Tasmania on a self-sufficient farm, and they had, they're growing an acre of veggies and had milking cows and made their own honey and wine and so forth. So, and that was all organic. So I got a lot of insight into growing with, natural systems at that time. And then much later, I set up my own systems, and then I did it as a sole trader for a while, and then started the business 10 years ago. And I saw it that there was, when we started the business, that there was a real need for more knowledge and better systems, better worm farm systems. There was a need there that maybe people weren't taking advantage, especially gardeners, of the opportunities of composting and worm farming in your own backyard and making your own nutrients. So in a nutshell, that's what got us started.
It's all the opportunity.
There's a lot more to the story. Yeah. So and that journey, of course, I've learned a lot more as I go. And I think it's one of those things where, if you're doing anything with soil, and soil is fundamental to everything that we do. Mm. All creatures on earth are reliant on soil. And the worms are really the kings of the soil ecology. And so the more that I look into it, the more I realize I don't actually know. It's so vast and so complex, but it is still, look, I'm out here at the worm farm now, and I still get such a buzz out of, we have large beds here where we breed the worms, and just the smell and the touch and the activity, the energy and the life that you see in a worm farm is just so inspiring. And it really is something that everyone can try. I believe that it's available for everyone to have a go at, and the benefits for your garden are just astounding, really. So yeah, I think everyone should be doing it.
that's what we're gonna all be doing it by the end of today.
That's right.
So tell us about Worm Lovers though. So basically sell all worm related products, worm farm related products.
Yeah, that's a very good question. So fundamentally, we sell the systems. So we have a range of worm farms that we sell. We also sell accessories and tools to use with worm farm. We're not just about worm farms either. So we have a number of really great self-watering wicking beds, wall gardens, things like worm blankets and tools for you, helping you with your worms, conditioner, that sort of thing as well. But we also do education. We've got a lot of resources on the website. We work with a lot of councils, setting up larger scale and other businesses, cafes, setting up larger scale worm farms for weight processing organic waste.
That's great.
And we also do a bit of wholesale stuff with the worm castings and the worms in larger quantities. So there's a range of things we do. We also work with a couple of councils, City of Wyndham and City of Geelong, and have a discount program for the residents, and that's been very successful as well to promote. For councils, it's a really big deal to start to try and reduce the organic waste going to landfill. So having a compost bin or a worm farm. We also have, you know, worm farms that you can use for your pet pet poo, that sort of thing. So there's a quite a diverse range of things that we do.
We need to get you across all councils.
That's dead right. Yeah. We go back quite a few years, Richard, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Keith and I met at, we did some stuff with together at Diggers back in the day. Right. Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Okay. At the Flower and Garden Show and other things,
That was fantastic. And you turned me away from actually composting, Richard, I've got to say, because I could not see a good return on my composting bins. But I tell you what, you got me into worm farming, and it has been just fantastic. It's just been so rewarding, you know.
Right, no. Yeah. It is rewarding, isn't it?
You know, it is.
You just see that.
Okay, well, I think
it's something.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I was going to ask Keith, how easy is it to deal with a worm farm? That's what I need to find out today. Tell us how easy it is.
Well, why
we can all do it without fuss.
Well, it takes up minimal space for a start. You know, there's no great big bin in the backyard that you've got to go out and keep on, you know, filling up with. And the way that the worm farm works for me is that we have a population that grows to set up the amount of waste that we produce. So it's a self-regulating sort of a system, isn't it, Richard?
Yeah, that's very well said, Keith. Yeah. So the amount of what, just to pick up from what the points that Keith's made, comparing to, I mean, first of all, a worm farm is still a composting system. It's all composting, but you're just supercharging the system by having worms in there, because the worms will eat the organic waste twice, sometimes three, four times faster than a compost bin.
Yeah.
Plus, they're very well suited to, you know, to compost properly, you really need to have a hot composting system where you have, you know, like a cubic meter or more material it's sort of batch processing.
Yeah.
And it's got to heat up and, you know, break. That's actually a good system as well. But you've got to have the material to have a larger quantity. Now, in a worm farm, it's a cold composting system, and they're adapted to, you know, regular but smaller quantities of waste going in, so that the worms will sort of match the amount of waste that most households are producing. So, and as Keith mentioned, the population of worms in the worm farm will adapt to how much you're feeding them. So this is one thing that a lot of people don't realise. You can actually, they will survive with quite a small quantity of waste. You know, like for instance, my mum, she's nearly 90 and she's had a worm farm for years and years and years, and she doesn't produce a lot of waste. Then you might have but the worms just adapt, the population adapts to that.
They plateau out, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that Keith will know too that one of the benefits, you know, some people come to this because they want to reduce their waste going to landfill. But then as gardeners, it's not just about waste at all. Suddenly that this material that we call waste is a resource that we can actually upcycle, and it's full of nutrients that we're wasting. So we can turn those nutrients, with the help of the worms and all the microbes, into those nutrients are captured and upscaled, if you like, to these beautiful soil amendments it's full of so you know you're seeing that the reward is really when you get it into your garden and you see the effect that it has on your plants. And I'm sure Keith would notice that.
Absolutely.
Using worm castings, yeah.
Just on what you mentioned before about the best forms of composting is hot composting. We have a great relationship with Vince from Clyde Compost, and he's actually turned me around a little bit in the way that the composting is done. So he's not after incredibly hot composting. He's not looking for the thesophiles and all those sorts of things. He's looking at a cooler composting range because it doesn't destroy the flora and the fauna of that material, and this is where the beauty is. If you're trying to make a decision whether you want a composting system or a worm farming composting system, this is the easiest way to go to get the best return.
It is, yeah, that's right. Okay. Particularly for Yeah, for households. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was going to say it's a good segue because that's when you go, we want to find out, okay, how do we, if it's easy, how do, yeah, what is the process? How do we set it up? You know, if you could go through the step-by-step process, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, there are different systems and I divide them into two. One is the stacker type system and they're the most common where you put these trays one on top of the other. And they're generally, they're a cheaper product. And they're quite adequate. But probably the best system of all, the easiest, is the what they call a continuous flow system. And that would be like a Hungry Bin, which are more expensive, but they're probably easier to use. Mm-hmm. But in both cases, what you want to do is start off with, you set it up according to the instructions, and then you start off with some organic material, but broken down organic material. So compost, or some people use cocoa core, or you can use soil, but that's just the bedding. So that's the home for the worms that you want to start off with, right? So you get your tray or your bin, and you put the appropriate amount of that material. So let's say compost, because that's probably the best, in the bottom. Then you add your worms. To start off with, generally worms come in a package of 1,000 or 2,000. Sounds like a lot of worms, but, 1,000 worms is sort of like a cupful or a handful. Right. So
about 250 grams, isn't it? About 1,000
worms. Yeah, 250. So a kilo of worms is about 4,000 worms, more or less, depending on the size.
And they're not any kind of worms, are they? They're specific types.
And I was actually, thanks to Elizabeth, I was going to mention that people confuse, there are thousands of different species of worms, and the ones we want to use are composting worms. So they eat large amounts of quite rich organic matter. So if you take worms, say, from your garden, they may be adapted to a soil environment that's quite got a different nutrient profile. So they won't survive in the rich, the rich organic material that you're putting into a worm farm. So anyway, you've got your worms, you put them in, and then you start feeding them. Very important that you don't feed too much to start with, because you've got a small population of worms. So you need to be patient and allow those worms to breed up, gradually increase the amount of food that you're feeding them. And then over a period of time, maybe it might take 3 months, maybe longer, maybe less, you'll have a much larger population of worms. And they will be able to eat, the contents of a couple of people, or it might be, if you've got a larger bin, might be a family, of all the waste from a family. Now, in terms of, there's lots of detail here that we can talk about if you'd like. I'll just go through the basics, but there is, there's a lot of material that's, if you want to get down to the really fine details.
That material the bin? If we order a bin, does that material actually come so we can sort of put it on our...
Generally not. If you get one of the smaller ones, sometimes they'll send you a block of cocoa, compressed cocoa core, coconut core, the fibre, and you need to soak that and so that it expands and then use that. I personally prefer compost because I feel like the worms happier in a compost than in a coconut fibre. You will need to get that to start with. And if you buy, say, a Hungry Bin, you'll need about four bags of compost to get it started. I guess the main sort of things to keep in mind are, first of all, where are you going to put it? So you definitely don't want to put it in the sun because it could plastic heats up very quickly. Yep. So that's really, really important. So you want to find the coolest part of the house that you can, under a tree or somewhere that's in full shade. The moisture level is important. So it wants to be damp and moist but not saturated. And definitely not dry. So generally there's a lot of water in the food waste, like, tomatoes, 95% water or whatever it is. So generally there's enough moisture in that food waste, but you might want to top it up with some water as you're going, if it looks like it's drying out.
Sure.
And one really important thing that is often overlooked is that, as well as your food scraps, There's a lot of other things you can put in there that, that worms will eat. Things like, you know, vacuum cleaner dust, egg cartons, toilet paper rolls. In fact, it's very important to put in a carbon source, so which typically from a household would be some form of waste paper.
Yep.
And about equal quantities. That's very. Are you finding that, Keith, with
yes,
your
own
farm? You're adding paper products in there.
Yeah, mainly paper. I add to mine, but it's just looking at it, just keeping that balance. Yeah. I mean, it's exactly the same thing applies to say a compost heap. You don't want it getting too wet and too anaerobic.
Yeah,
you want to keep it open. You know, and it's exactly. That carbon.
Yeah,
that balances off that nitrogen ratio.
I think where my concern is that I keep thinking that I've got these live animals. I've got to make sure I keep looking after them. How often are we doing all these things? Every day are we checking our worm farm, or you know, how do you?
Yeah, no. Look, I mean, I'm a lazy worm farmer, right? So I just wait till I've got. I might only feed them, you know, once or twice a week. Probably twice a week's better. I mean, it's all about your adapting it to your, you know, the you know, what you're doing in the kitchen and then what you're doing in the garden then become related, because you're going, all right, well, I produce a lot of, you know, once a week I get a lot of waste because I have a dinner party. I don't know. I've got a lot of people there, and other times I don't produce much at all because I'm busy and I've got a lot of takeaway or whatever. So, you know, there's a lot of variation in how often you want to feed them. A really good tip is to have if you've got a little kitchen caddy or a bucket, in the kitchen, you know, typically they're a 7-litre little bucket with a lid.
Yep.
You want to empty that before it starts getting sludgy and smelly, obviously. So, you know, every 3 days or so, 2 or 3 days. Sometimes some people do it every day.
Yep.
And a really good tip is to get some scrunch up newspaper or something and put it in the bottom of the caddy. Yeah, and there's your carbon. That will soak up the liquids, you know, draining to the bottom of the caddy.
Yep.
And that paper will soak up that liquid. And then you just tip it into the worm farm and you've already got a bit of carbon in there as you go. With the paper, I mean, I just shred all my bills and stuff and I throw that in the worm farm as well. So they love, you know, office paper. You can put in, you know, rip up corrugated cardboard or paper towels, napkins. You know, the cheap paper products break down really quickly, so they're probably better. You don't want to use coated paper, you know, with like coloured paper or anything like that, or waxy paper, that won't break down. But anything else, you know, paper, you know, the paper bags you get now from the supermarkets, that goes in there. So, also coffee grounds. I used to recommend tea bags, but I'm not so sure now. I think, sadly, a lot of tea bags have got a plastic component in them. So
yeah, you have to get the organic ones.
Maybe avoid
the right ones. Yeah, yep.
So yeah, that's right. And, you know, one thing that really annoys me is the little labels that they put on fruit, you know, like on avocados and apples and things. God knows why they do that, because you've got to count them anyway, you know.
Yeah,
it's just and that all ends up in your worm farm. It really does my head in, you know. But so
we're constantly doing this whole process. What about the movement of, don't we have to move trays around and do certain things?
Well, with the tray ones you do.
Get a bin perhaps.
Yeah, so with the ones with trays, they are a bit tricky because have you used those, you know, the can of worms or whatever?
Yeah, Keith? Yeah, I have. And quite frankly, I think it's a pain in the bum. And I've taken out one of the actual, you know, panels and just keep it simple. I keep the top one and the bottom one and just keep on rotating, you know, the material.
That's right. Yeah.
Right? You don't want to go over complicating things, because, you know, the more things you add, the more questions that people ask about how things are going to work, you know. Huh.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, simplicity. Keep it simple.
Yeah. So just to describe your bins, they're a little bit like a wheelie bin, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, the Hungry bins. They're made in New Zealand. And mm-hmm. They're real. I think they're probably the best bin that's available. And they're just like a big tube, so they're very simple to use.
Yeah.
And you feed in the top, and when it fills up, you pull the bottom. there's a tray in the bottom and you take that off and that's got the worm castings in it. And then when that creates a bit of space in the bottom, so the contents drops down and then you've got more room in the top. So you're continually doing it. It's similar with the one with the trays, but you probably with the trays, you know, you'd want to wait till the bottom tray is completely full up and processed by the worms. One of the issues with those ones with the trays is that they've got a tap on them. The taps can block up a bit. Mm-hmm. So I recommend pulling the tap off and letting it free drain into a bucket or something like that.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
I was going to ask you also. I was just going to ask you about the because worm farms produce castings and worm tea. What correct, are the individual benefits of both? How do you deal with both of those things?
Yeah, so look, they're both, I guess, solid and liquid form of the same thing. They've more or less got the same nutrients in it. Now, the worm juice is fantastic because it's actually probably easier to use than the castings, and you're going to get more worm juice than worm castings over time because a lot of the liquid's being flushed through the system continuously. The worms also grind up the material into very small particles. It's like finished worm castings are very fine and silky, almost like a mousse.
Right.
But they're both fantastic. Mm-hmm. With the worm juice, the beauty of that is that you can, you can store it for time until you want to use it, till you've got enough to use. Just dilute it about 1 to 10. So you would just get a watering can, really, and just put a litre of worm juice, fill it up, and away you go. And you can use it on all plants. It won't burn the plants because it's not doesn't have high levels of NPK. So it's suitable for all pot, fantastic for pot plants or veggie gardens. And with the castings, you can make a blend, again, about 10%, 1 to 10. Or maybe 1 to 5 and make a beautiful potting mix, or you can use it as a top dressing and just sprinkle a bit, over the top of your veggies, then water it in, dig it in or mulch it. And you really notice the difference. One of the amazing things is that you will see, say you've got a plant that's looking a bit sad, give it a dose of worm juice and you see them perk up even within an hour or two. It's quite amazing. It's really like a tonic.
Yeah,
because it stimulates all the nutrients that are in the soil but are dormant. Yeah, the microbes get to work and start releasing them to the plants.
Mm. The interesting thing about the worm castings and the worm wee is that 100% of those components are actually in the soil. They don't leach out and away or anything else. So they're locked into the soil and are taken up by the plants as they require them. That's brilliant.
It's and you put your finger on it, and that's one of the things that with a lot of chemical fertilizers, a lot of it is not in a plant available form, so it just sits there. It gets leached into what this is the problem with all the algae. It's all the nitrogen and coming off fertilizers running. Whereas with the material coming out of a worm farm, all of those nutrients are in a soluble plant available form, so they can take it up. And this is what the worms are doing. They're full of microbes and they're secreting those microbes with all them, and they're all those microbes are actually releasing all these goodies to the plants. And as the worm secretes them into the soil, they're available to the plant immediately. So this is all going on right around the planet in the healthy soils of the planet. It's all invisible, but it's all happening in this incredible way that it doesn't necessarily show up in the science, in conventional science. Yeah, it's quite extraordinary. It's living soil that's what we're talking about.
Got to do it. Any issues or challenges that we should be prepared for when maintaining one of these worm farms?
Yeah. Well, I guess there are a couple. One is that probably one of the most common problems that people have is overfeeding. So the worms can only eat, there's the capacity of the worm farm, is only going to hold so many worms, and those worms can only eat so much at a time. So if you fill it up like a rubbish bin full of your organic waste or your food scraps, it's going to rot and smell before they can eat it all. So you just feed, the rule of thumb is add your next feed when half the previous feed's gone.
Right.
And never more than a couple of inches, a nice layer of a couple of inches at a time. And really helps to give it a bit of a fluff, you know, a bit of an aeration with a little cultivator or something like that, to just aerate and mix those microbes around, and that will really, you know, help it more efficient. One of the challenges too is when you have a heat wave, is that if the worm farm gets too hot, and that means over 30 degrees, inside the worm farm, it could be hotter than that out in the air, but the actual temperature of the bedding inside the worm farm, the worms become stressed and they can actually die. So that is something to think about, and that's why you want to put it in a really shady place.
Yeah.
If we do get one of those horrendous heat waves where it just doesn't cook, you know, you get those, you know, 3 days in a row where it's 40 degrees. We haven't had one of those this summer, thank God, yet, touch wood. But if that happens, what you can do is get a couple of milk, like 2-litre plastic milk bottles, fill them with water and leave them in the freezer. And then you just pop that into the top of the worm farm, just bury it a little bit, and that creates a cool zone. As it melts, the worms will, they can detect where the cooler part, they'll all move around the, around that bottle and stay there. So, they're the main things,
Richard, we've been told we're being wound up. We're being wound up, unfortunately, because we could talk more. But look,
I know. Well, I'm wound up now. So,
thank you.
Look, I wind down.
This is fantastic. I definitely feel more relaxed, as I'm sure many of our listeners are. And we need to get out and get one of those bins from Worm Lovers. So we will definitely get onto the website and have a good look. And I know that Keith will encourage me to do this. He has been encouraging me already anyway. So we really appreciate the time you've taken to educate us. It's really been fantastic. It's obviously a very beneficial subject. So thank you. So for everybody, for all of our listeners, please go to wormlovers.com.au for all your worm farming needs. And thank you, Richard. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Richard.
Really appreciate it. It was great talking to you. Thank you.
Come and visit us sometime soon. Come.
I will. Yeah, I want to. That'd be great.
Have a longer chat. That'd be great.
Yeah. Thanks very much, mate.
Thank
See you,
you
again. Thank Talk you. To you soon. Thanks, Richard.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Muddy Boots. For more information on today's podcast, please go to muddyboots.net.au. And happy gardening.